he had the product, it just needed to be marketed properly, and then it just took off and it worked.
Unconventional Life, the show where I interview successful entrepreneurs, artists, creators, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. Twice a week, we will explore how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck. I'm your host, Joel Schroeder. Unconventional Life, welcome to the show. This is your host, Joel Schroeder, tuning in today from Boulder, Colorado. Got a special guest joining us from Australia, Julian Petrulis in the house. Julian, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
What's up? Yes, I am. Let's do it.
Awesome. Julian is the 25-year-old founder of Over Agency, a boutique management and marketing agency focused on the development of unique artists on a worldwide scale. He sold both a tech startup and a music festival company prior to starting this management agency from scratch at 21 years old. And today, Over represents the likes of William Synge, with over 6 million online followers and over a billion video views, and who also recently signed one of the largest record deals in the US last year. And you know, I know you guys have been busy on the road in the middle of a tour at the moment. So super appreciate you jamming with the Unconventional Life family this morning, your time. And welcome to the show. Fill in any gaps that I might have left out. I know you're a man who wears many hats, and give us a glimpse into your personal life.
Yes, of course. Thank you so much for having me. I run a management agency, and I am midway through a tour that we're doing right now. We're on Will, who is his name, his artist name is William Synge, who's blown up in like the last, I guess, 16 months. We're just midway through his, I don't even know what tour, like 10th or 15th tour. We're currently in Australia, which is our, you know, where we're from, where we started this all. And yeah, like it's pretty crazy to see the progression, because just last year we started his first tour and the rooms were really, really small. And now, you know, we're doing some pretty cool size rooms, which is really, really, like, you know, the first show that we did, I just started crying. It was pretty crazy to have that happen to me. It's just been like a whirlwind experience to see this all happen, because it really is, it's crazy. Like anybody can just have this happen to them. You know, you kind of work for 10 years, and it's kind of a famous saying to say that you work for 10 years to become an overnight sensation. And that's kind of what has happened here.
Yeah, it's so, so awesome. And I know we were talking before, and a lot of our listeners know that I just finished up an album in Vancouver that'll be coming out in December. And it's so interesting, like the landscape of being an artist and a musician, like in 2017, 2018, versus like where it's been, and there's been so many shifts in the industry. And you know, I'm curious, you know, being, you know, in the management and marketing agency sphere, what shifts that you've been seeing, what do you think is working so well that's giving, you know, your agency, Over Agency, and, you know, the success that he's having?
Yeah, I think that for me personally, just since I was really young, so I started kind of in the music world when I was, I guess, 12, 13 years old. Like I started taking it really, really seriously. And I'm really lucky that the internet existed when I was that age. So MySpace was around, and I kind of got a feel for marketing and how to actually push out whatever I was trying to do to people so they could find it. And I guess I've just been using the same kind of formula since I was that age up until now. So I tried it with my own artist project, which I have stopped, and a while ago, and it started to kind of work. And I've just been replicating that same formula, I guess, for 10 plus years. So it was the same thing with Will. You know, he had like a bit of a following already. You know, it wasn't huge, but he had like 5,000 likes online. And I just came in and kind of revamped all his branding, redid all the marketing, and then he was already so talented. He just needed that channel, that outlet. And then he had the product. It just needed to be marketed properly. And then it just took off and it worked. So I think that's what it comes down to most of the time. You just need to open a couple of those doors up, which I had the ability to do. It's just kind of, it's also luck, timing, and so many other factors that kind of you can't choose sometimes, that they just have to happen. So it's really interesting to see it happen, but it has happened a few times for me, and it always kind of does follow a similar pattern.
Yeah. I like that you touch upon, you know, the product already being in place, and you see that a lot in the arts, but even as entrepreneurs, where there's some really impactful things that are being created and they're not being, you know, exposed. And a lot of times it's the creative that doesn't have the eye for the marketing, or it's like a really great marketer that, you know, is good at marketing, but can't create like that good of a product. And so it's kind of this catch 22 at times. And I'd be curious, you know, just to get a little bit more of the world, like some examples of like some of the stuff, like when you first met him, say at that 5,000, you know, like kind of model, to like little tweaks that you did. And then also from the frame of someone that's listening to this, that, you know, either is an artist or even someone that has, you know, a business that they're running, like little tweaks that they might be able to consider and how they're putting their packaging together.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a huge thing for us was with some other artists that I was working with, they were following a formula where they were really trying to have people remember them on a daily basis in terms of their social media. So they were posting at least once a day, and they were coming up with really unique captions. So, you know, I know one guy who actually hired a team of writers, and they would actually be working on the artist captions on a daily basis. So they would have a photographer who would be, let's say, you know, top of the line, and they would be taking, they'd go out for one day of the week, and they would take like a whole bunch of photos that would last in the week. And they would just take like amazing looking photos. Then they would have their writers come in and come up with some really cool, you know, eye grabbing captions. And then they would just keep posting every single day until people started to remember them, because they were standing out from all the other people that were trying to, let's just say musicians that were trying to cut through. They just had something that kind of, that grabbed your attention straight away. So that was kind of the first thing that we just made the marketing and the branding, like in terms of social media, it had to really stand out. And as soon as we did that, you know, the likes and engagement just went up so much. Like it was like a 300-400% increase in almost immediately. And once we saw that that was working, I was like, okay, so this really is like a thing that you really do need. And a lot of people now, there's only a couple, like a handful of people that don't need it, because they just reached like the pinnacle of celebrity, that, you know, it's kind of almost cooler to be a little bit more distant and to update people on a 1-3 week basis. But for most people that are coming up, I definitely think that you need to start posting on a daily basis and pushing yourself out there, showing people that you have creativity in your photos and your captions. Like captions are a big thing. Just like one little catchphrase or the way that you word a one liner can change the engagement by so much. And I think that's a really hard thing to do, but it's such a left out thing. You know, people are also really super focused on the music, which is definitely the most important thing. But initially, I think social media is everything, and just how you put it out there will cut you through a lot quicker.
Yeah, awesome. Such great advice. So I'd love to go back in time a little bit, and, you know, if we were to be a fly on the wall of you growing up, you know, I know you mentioned starting like, you know, music stuff at like 10, 12 years old, but what would we have seen like you in high school? Did you go to university at all? what would that have looked like for you growing up into like where you are now?
Yeah, so I, ever since I can remember, I was just super passionate about music. Like 8 or 9 years old, it's all I wanted to do. I would work part-time for my dad, and he would, you know, give me some pocket money whenever, you know, for whatever odd jobs I could get. And with that money, I would buy music equipment, recording equipment, and then try and, I would just spend like almost every night in my bedroom making music and trying to figure out how to use the software and how to make myself sound better and how to produce, and watching tons of tutorials which on YouTube, which weren't really a thing back then. So there was like maybe 1, 2, or 3 tutorials on the whole of music production on the whole internet. But now it's like every little thing, you know, if you want to learn how to EQ a certain instrument, there's probably like 5,000. So back then it was really limited, and you had to be super driven if you wanted to kind of get to a certain point. So I spent a long time on that. And after about a year or two, let's fast forward to like 14, I started a MySpace page and started posting up the music that I was making. And it was kind of like another really lucky streak where things just kind of started taking off for me. And I started growing a little audience where I was from in Sydney, in Australia. And I started getting booked for certain gigs and started growing like a small little fan base, and then started releasing music, and I started making money off iTunes because iTunes kind of just came out. Like the iPod had just been invented like the year before, and people started to buy music online, and it was kind of a really new movement and wave. And MySpace was blowing up a lot of artists. You know, artists that are still around today have pretty much MySpace to thank. Like Calvin Harris, who was a huge EDM DJ, no one knows that he was in a band, and the band was called Calvin Harris, and he was doing like, you know, more kind of disco and music, and without MySpace, he wouldn't be who he is today. And that's so many other artists have come up platform. I guess a lot of artists that have stuck around now, like let's say Chris Brown and Rihanna, they also still came from that same movement. So it was a huge wave that was happening, and I was lucky to be part of it. And as I kept growing, I became one of the largest artists on MySpace Australia, but I wasn't making much money because the market was still so small. Like Australia is not a huge territory. There's only so many people. The internet was only still just taking off. And I was trying to figure out how I could take it to the next level, like how I could become a bigger artist, a bigger entrepreneur, how to become more successful. And I was like, okay, there's only so many gigs I can play. I'm 15 years old. There's only so many shows that I can be booked for because I'm still too young and the music I'm making is not relatable to, you know, a 25-year-old. So I came up with an idea to start my own kind of show, like my own festival, where I would book other acts and book myself, and I would use the audience that I've created to basically try and sell the tickets. So I had made some money off the iTunes sales and the music sales, and I tried to figure out how to do it. I started hitting up all the venues in my city, and all the venues were super, super big. Like I wanted to try and do like a 500 or 1,000 cap room, but all of them were, they didn't want to take my show. The only one that wanted to take my show was a venue that fit like 3,500 people, which was like insanely big. It would cost every single dollar that I had saved up to rent out. And the chances of me making money on this thing or even selling this thing out were just like slim to none. But I don't know why I did it. I just chose to do it. And I booked it all out. I booked all the DJs. I booked myself. And then I created a flyer and copied the same formula that I still use today in terms of marketing. And I put it on up online, and then it sold out really, really fast. So it was like a huge thing for me seeing that, you know, there was something there and I could use my strategies to keep it going.
Unconventional Life family, would you like to take your business to the next level? Join us for a 5-day business accelerator in Nicaragua this November 30th through December 4th with 75 like-minded entrepreneurs from around the world designed to elevate every area of your life. We'll be staying in a private luxury treehouse, shuttling you from the airport in a private seaplane, catamaraning to different islands, seeing and interacting with local Nicaraguan people, and so, so much more. Head over to unconventionallifeshow.com/Nicaragua to get all the details. Make sure to mention you're a listener of the show as applications go out quickly. We literally had 300 applications come in last time with just 50 spots, sold out in about a month and a half. So head over to unconventionallifeshow.com/Nicaragua now to get all the details. It's like such good stuff that you're sharing. And I'm curious, you know, about the strategy and especially being like a 15-year-old, like that's got a lot of like, you know, balls, for lack of better words, to basically do that. And I can imagine being your parents being like, hey guys, like here's what we're gonna do, or here's what I'm gonna do. And for them, like, what that relationship was like as well for you. But yeah, curious about your parents and curious about that strategy, or at least like some of the components of that strategy.
Oh, of which strategy again? Say that again.
Oh, the one that you used with the flyers to sell out the event there. And you said you use versions of it today still with the strategies that you employ.
Yeah, so I guess there's always a way to kind of find, you can connect. Like back then I had hired some people that would actually go and find, let's say, you know, you can give them specific demographic, and they would go and actually, you know, let's say I wanted to target 50,000 people in that one area in Sydney, let's say, or one area in Colorado. We could actually go and find those people and then directly either message them or directly interact with their page, so it wasn't as forward. And then the page would already be set up. So let's say the festival had a page. We would, and this is something that you just do now through Facebook ads. Like it's just done straight away. But back then that didn't exist. There was no MySpace ads. Google ads, I don't even think had been created yet. It was still coming in. So we had like pieces of software that would go and target all the users, and the festival page would already be set up. And then, you know, as soon as there would be some interaction with the original page, liking the, you know, let's say the person that we're trying to target, they would then see the page. It's already set up. All the marketing's there, and it was essentially free. So now if I wanted to try and target 50,000 people in a certain market and demographic, I would have to spend a certain amount of money, maybe more money than I would realistically be able to afford, because there's a certain budget that I have to spend on the actual gig to try and sell it out. And I probably wouldn't make any money, but back then it was free. So we would use pieces of software to get in touch with these markets. And then all of a sudden there was so much hype on the event and it was all free. So I remember the first time that, like, we had been marketing it for like a week before it actually came on sale. And I the page grew so big by using all these pieces of software. And I just thought, like, you know, there was all these people liking the page, and they were, you know, they were just being friendly in terms of like seeing the interaction from the initial page, and like, you know, adding us as a friend and sending us a message and saying, hey, we're excited for the event. But then I went out to like a mall one day to hand out flyers, and I was going up to like all these younger kids, because the event was targeted to you know, teenagers. And I was handing them a flyer and going, hey, this is the festival. And every single person already knew what it was. So I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. The power that MySpace had back then. And it was the same formula as well, as like doing high quality photos, captions. That was a huge thing that has still, you know, it's kind of continued on to today, that you can use with almost anything, you know, from festivals to being a band to being an entrepreneur to anything, to have that social presence. You look at all the top kind of, I guess, influencers online, you know, they've all followed that exact same strategy. Instagram has just kind of taken over, and you have to post quality content. You have to post quality photos. But back then it just wasn't like anything. There wasn't really a platform to do that. It's only after Facebook kind of still came in that people started to kind of do that. And now Instagram is just like, you know, you have to do it. If you go and look at Will's socials, you know, we're posting like high quality photos every day with these hopefully clever captions.
Totally. So awesome. And what a cool thing to stumble on as a young person. And what was that like for friends and family? And I imagine in one way, like being super engaged in this online world and doing all that stuff. And then at the same time, you know, having your like, you know, physical world, having like a different environment and still being young and still growing up. And so like, how did the two worlds kind of dance with each other?
I think it was really crazy, because I didn't have much support from people around me, and that's to be totally expected. You know, I guess it's with anything that you do. If you reach out to your friends and family and tell them about a crazy idea and you want to spend all your money on it, you better hope that they're going to shut you down and say that that's a terrible idea, because that's just a conventional kind of ideology and mindset that somebody should give you as a response. So I received the same thing. My dad's always been very optimistic. I was raised by a single parent. It was just my dad. I never had a mother growing up. So it was just me and him essentially my whole life. he kind of struggled his whole life. You know, we were on and off welfare, and I think that's kind of what gave me a drive to want to be successful and really hungry to want to be, to essentially to be the things that I never had. So I, you know, he was kind of the only optimistic person. You know, he thought it was a good idea from me telling him all these things that I wanted to do, and he was always kind of positive. But anyone else, you know, from other extended family members to friends, I would tell them the names of the events. And really funny, I'm sure he won't care, but Will, the artist that I manage now, who's, you know, extremely successful, I've been friends with him since that period. And I told him about one of the ideas that I had, which was this festival. I told him about the name. I said, man, I think this is going to be like, I really believed in myself. And I thought it was going to be really big. I always believed in it, even from before it was announced. I was like, hey, what do you think about this name? What do you think about this idea? What do you think if I do it this way? And he was like, nah, I don't think it's going to work. So when it came out, it had proved almost everybody wrong. And it kind of made me really believe in myself from that moment. But being like 15 years old and doing something like this, there's kind of like you have a belief system in yourself that you wouldn't if you were 25. You know, you're a lot more calculated now because you understand the risks and, you know, the real world complications that can happen if you do fail. Back then, you kind of don't. You don't have an understanding and grip of reality. Like, it's a lot more, you see things a lot differently. And I think if I didn't start at that age, I don't think I would be where I am now. So it has been a crazy experience to look back at myself then. But I'm really thankful that I had a lot of people shut me down, because I think you need it.
Yeah, totally. Definitely, in my own experience, builds that like healthy resilience to keep going.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I'm curious, like, your mental game, because I think, you know, at least for myself, like taking on and creating like big visions and ideas and really this like unconventional mindset, you know, the anything is possible mindset, it takes something, especially to keep your mental game sharp and in tune and to keep believing and dreaming bigger and bigger. And how have you done that over the years? And, you know, what practices or tools have you used that you can share with some of our listeners?
Yeah, so I think like I'm very uncalculated in terms of what you just said. Like, again, let's go back to when I was 15. I still have this to today, but I think it's a lot deeper. And we talked about it just before, you know, before we started the interview, that I think that there is something a lot deeper than all of us. And, you know, from this young age, I always had this really burning passion and feeling within my body that wanted to be something bigger than I was, that wanted to have things that, you know, weren't really possible to have. I wanted to achieve things that just weren't likely at all. And if I was to tap into that feeling, it just felt like this fire, like this burning flame within myself. And even now, like right now, as we talk about it, I can feel it. So whenever I've really wanted something to happen in my life, I kind of tap into that feeling and really think about it. And things just like happen. And it's so crazy. Like, it sounds really far-fetched, but it's been something that it took me a long time to realize like why certain things were happening for me, because, you know, I've done a lot of things where I've been successful, but then I've done a lot of things where I've failed and almost been left in a place where I'm like, how am I ever going to recover from this? How am I going to get back to the point where I was before? And I just kind of like tapped into that feeling again, you know, that fire feeling in my stomach. And, you know, within 6 months or a year, whatever I wanted to happen again just happened. So it's kind of something unexplainable, but I am a very big believer in the powers that are of the unknown.
Totally. You know, some people might relate to them as miracles or like accidental chances. I at least believe that the synchronicities are all external feedback for cues of alignment. And so when you're in a certain degree of alignment with yourself and with your environment, that like those accidents, you actually can be the source of generating them, and that they can keep appearing in your life. And it's a lot of what I relate to and how you're speaking to it. And for those that are listening, you know, I know it's alignment, at least for myself, has been at the foundation of it. And so I get curious, you know, along the lines, like, do you, like, how do you take care of yourself while you're moving and you're, you know, I know you're in the middle of a tour. You've had like 9 sold out tours in the last, I don't know, year or two. And so you're moving around a lot. And so how do you make time for yourself amongst all of the, you know, the games that you're playing in the world?
It's really tough. It's really, really tough. You have to kind of go out of your way to get some alone time whenever you can. I think that's a big key, because when you're touring, you know, you're constantly around a lot of people. We have a large crew that we tour with. There's always something that needs to be done. So I actually manage Will, the artist, but I also DJ for him. And initially, so I'm on stage with him every night. So I'm doing 2 roles. And initially, like, I was doing almost everything for this project because we didn't have the budget to go and hire a photographer. We didn't have the budget to go and hire people to run the social media. So I was doing essentially like almost every role that I could put my hands on. And after a year, like, essentially when he started to blow up and the tours started happening and we began touring nonstop, I felt that I burnt out. Like, I was already burnt out and we hadn't even begun yet. So having alone time is a really, really big thing. Whenever I can meditate, I try and meditate. But I think just being in my own space, being allowed to be around my own energy is a really big key to being able to recharge and not getting to that burnt out stage. So it really depends. Like, you know, right now we're in Australia and we have early wake ups and we have to do these long flights just to get to the next show. Whereas in America, we can be on a tour bus and kind of, you know, put the headphones in and have your own space. And if you get to the venue early, you can kind of, you know, be in your own zone. And the same in Europe, you know, luckily you can just drive and you're in the next country in a few hours. But right now it's really tough. Like, you know, I only got a few hours sleep last night. I've woken up, I feel like a zombie and there's really nothing I can do. I just kind of have to power through it. And hope tomorrow is a better day.
Yeah, and totally. It's like definitely times in all of our journeys where sometimes you just have to like execute and it doesn't feel the best and look the best. And it definitely seems like that's what's alive in your world at the moment. So
you just have to power through, man, sometimes.
Totally. So last question for you before we transition to the rapid fire round, our last portion of the show is, you know, really around combining all the different passions. And I love, you know, that you mentioned earlier, like you're 10, 12 years old, your love of music and then morphing that expression to, oh, well, I'll just create this festival and then I'll book myself. So I still get to do my love of music with all these other loves. And now even with Will, you know, you're DJing for him and you're still getting to be an expression. And so how do you combine all of your, you know, passions, if you will, and interests and wearing all the hats? And like, how important is it to you that those different expressions get airtime at the same time? And how do they all kind of work and unfold in your life?
It's a really good question. I think that essentially it is really important. I guess, you know, a lot of us, and I'm not sure about you, but you know, you told me that you are a musician and you are, and you know, you were telling me about your journey and your story as well. But I think like if a young child picks up a passion really early on without any drive, like without any push from, you know, their parents or anybody else, and they're just obsessed with it, then there's something about that thing that is kind of always going to be inside of them. So for me, it was music. Like, there was nothing that was going to stop me at 7, 8, 9 years old. Almost anybody that I know that's successful today within the music, you know, within following music as an artist or a producer or a writer, whatever it may be, they have also started really, really young. It was kind of something that you just couldn't stop them. They just had this urge to do it. There are a couple exceptions where they, you know, they started really late and then all of a sudden they figured out they were really talented. But I think that most people, they have something that kind of just draws them to that. And it's just something that, I don't know what it is, but it could be, you know, if we look at it on a deeper level, it could be something to do with, you know, a previous life or something that we're kind of already on a path to go for. But for me, it's just been that thing, like from a young age, I was obsessed with it. So I guess those feelings have kept me, balancing out the business side and then also kind of wanting to be involved in it as well. Like, I'm really passionate about songwriting, so I am in a lot of sessions with some artists and producers and writers that I manage and have my hat in the creative side as well, because I think that I still love to do it, and I think that I'm you know, pretty good at doing certain things that do go beyond the spectrum of the business side. Like, a lot of managers that I know are just sticking to one thing, and that is purely the business side. But then there are other managers that are really, like, you know, have their hat in, you know, the songwriting, in the production, in so many aspects of the creative world, and they do it well. And it just kind of depends on you as a person and how much kind of trust you have in yourself and how much trust the artist has in you. So I'm kind of lucky that some of the artists that I work with have trust in me and in some of the abilities that I have, and they've kind of asked me to want to step up to the plate in certain things. Yeah. So I guess it kind of just depends. Like, now I'm at a point with, let's say I'm DJing every night for you know, this artist, it's starting to become really tiring and exhausting. So, maybe I might, you know, kind of retire it soon, but I guess I started really, really young, and I'm getting there, but I still am fairly young. I wouldn't see myself continuing this at 35 or 30. I think I'm just doing it now because I'm transitioning into what my role should be and what I really am focused on. But it's been like a really amazing thing to be able to kind of, like, still be on the music side and still be on the business side and combine it all together.
Totally. Yeah. I love that and can relate a lot to what you're saying. And, you know, I can almost relate to it as energetic discernment, where as I've, you know, I'm 28 now and I feel you on the getting old, even though at 28, I'm just like, oh, it's like so close to 30.
We're going to look back when we're like 40 and 50 and be like, oh my God, why did we say that?
I know. I have so many of my friends, you know, they say the same thing, like, Jules, come on, like, you're being ridiculous. But nonetheless, when I look at the things that I would say yes to earlier on, or, you know, even the things that you're just kind of figuring it out and you're trying out what you like. And I think a lot of times you don't get the permission to even explore or even to try, and that through, like, that trying, and I almost like the image of, like, a child, but it's like, you know, unfiltered, raw, expressive, like, play in a lot of ways. Do you get to kind of know and feel what you like? And, you know, that relates to a lot of entrepreneurs starting businesses that are hearing this right now. It's like the same conversation. And I think that discernment comes with, you know, a lot of hours, for example, DJing a lot of nights and hopping on early morning flights and being like, okay, like, I can do this. And, like, is there a way that I can serve myself and my gifts more in version, you know, 4.0 or something like that? And so, yeah, I appreciate you touching on that part in the conversation. So
100%. And hey, don't, like, to anyone listening, don't be afraid to kind of, you know, if you have a passion to want to pursue something that isn't super conventional, you know, like, business is conventional. Trying to start a company is conventional. It's hard and it's tough, but it's a lot easier than trying to be, to try and pursue music. And I'm sure that you know that, like, it's not until you kind of reach a certain amount of success, everybody looks down on you. And especially where I'm from in Australia, we have a thing called tall poppy syndrome that, you know, it's kind of very, very hard to, for anybody to take you seriously in what you're doing, unless you've really, really cracked it. Like, unless your song's on the radio 5 times a day, they're still going to think that what you're doing is kind of crazy. And I manage a songwriter now who actually, who started really, really late. He actually became like a songwriter at 21, which is, you know, most artists already started by 15, 16, and he's had a lot of success by starting at 21. So I guess he kind of went against the grain and was like, you know what, I'm going to do something a little bit more unconventional. I was going to university and studying the typical thing. And I just decided, you know what, I couldn't ignore what my true calling was. And he did it, and it worked. So sometimes your true calling is just sitting there and people ignore it, and then their whole life just flashes before them, and they kind of, like, regret not ever taking it up, because I guess they get to a certain age where it becomes, you know, in our industry, it is, like, a little bit superficial. And if you are trying to become an artist at 40 years old, like, the odds are really stacked against you. But if you're still below 30 and you have that kind of that drive and that passion, but you haven't told anybody about it, I think that it's still always exciting to kind of explore it.
Yeah, totally. So good. All right, rapid fire round, series of questions coming at you. And for those that are tuning in, we've got a giveaway that we're going to share just after the rapid fire round on how to take this conversation a step further. Are you ready? 5 questions coming at you.
Let's do it. Go.
Okay, question number 1, fill in the blank. If you really knew me, you would know what?
That I don't sleep much.
Next question. What is your favorite comfort item that you like to have with you that makes you feel at home?
My phone. That's so crazy to say.
Nice. Next question. If you had a dog, what would you name him?
Buddy.
Nice.
Very typical.
Yeah, nice. Next question. If you could turn back the time to your 16-year-old self and give him a piece of advice, what would you say to him?